Darling, it's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world.
Welcome to the Sweep Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken's my co-host. Ken, what's going on?
Oh, Lynn, it is going. It is going. I am so excited to be here for this episode of the Sweep Spot Podcast.
369.
That is absolutely incredible, Lynn. That's a lot of work, and my hat is off to you.
To you too, sir. You've been around almost this whole time, so...
Almost, yes.
Almost.
Special guest star.
And Ken and I are both former Disneyland custodial cast members, and we host this podcast, which is the number one Disneyland podcast hosted by two former Disneyland custodial cast members.
Number one.
And we're also authors of the books Cleaning the Kingdom. You can get those books on Amazon. You can get signed ones on our website, thesweetspot.com. You can get them on digital copies through through anywhere you find digital books.
I do want to point out, sorry to step on you a little bit there, but I do want to point out that they are, I can confidently say, they are the best books written ever about Disneyland custodial.
Maybe the only books. Written so far.
They're the best, Lynn.
They are the best.
Yes, right.
Well, and you can also get the audiobooks on Audible, both of them. And you can get those on audible.com or wherever you find audiobooks. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to help support our show. Every little bit helps. Even a dollar is great. If for $5 or more a month, though, you can get one bonus episode that Ken and I record specifically for that. And then you can also get to join in on our current events in the chat room once a month. We do that sometime in the middle to beginning of the month. And I usually send out a notification about a week before or so, and then I'll remind everyone the day of. But we usually do that on a Friday night. It's usually like 8 o'clock Pacific, I think. And, so for $5 more, you can get all those great perks. And we do have a new Patreon I'd like to mention.
Ooh.
It is Annie Dolan. And Annie is a concierge travel planner.
Oh, Annie, thank you. That's thank very you. Nice of you.
Really appreciate it. So anyway, we have the Patreon. We have a lot going on. But Ken, who is our guest tonight?
Well, we have I believe they've both been on the show before, I believe.
Yeah.
Tom Morris, who used to be with Imagineering, and he's done a lot of research into the history of Disneyland and Imagineering. And we also have Jeff Baham from Mousestalgia. Mm-hmm. And you know, Jeff is somewhat of when I say somewhat, I'm minimizing it, but Jeff is an expert on the Haunted Mansion. Mm-hmm. So, one of the big experts out there on the Haunted Mansion. So, we have them both together on this episode.
We're going to do a discussion on the Haunted Mansion. And I wanted to mention that Tom, you can also see Tom on, if you have Disney Plus, he's on the Imagineering story, in different spots throughout the episodes. But yeah, you can catch him on there. There's a few people on that show I realized that we have had on our show, which is we're very lucky to and honored to be able to do that. So,
yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I'm excited to get into it. I'm excited for you guys to hear it. So let's do that now. Looking to book a vacation to Disneyland Resort, Walt Disney World Resort, Disney Cruise Line, Disney Alani, Disneyland Paris, Adventures by Disney, Universal Studios Hollywood, Universal Studios Orlando, then I can do that for you. If you contact me and we can talk about all the different options and dates, and we can kind of even make recommendations on which days might be the best for you to go. And also as a complimentary, when you book with us, we will book your dining for you if you'd like, special events. And we also, when we book a vacation for you, we just don't say have a good time after we book it for you. We are there every step of the way. We contact you before your trip to make sure everything's squared away. We even have a checklist to make sure that you have everything you need. Reservations, dining, all these different things. Your transportation, if you need help with that from the airport, any of those sort of things, we can help you with that too. We want to make the vacation the best it can be for you, because I know that vacations aren't cheap, and we can help you do that. So if you contact me, that's Lynn, and the email is lbarron@concierge.com. That's LBARRON at concierge.com. Or you can go to thesweepspot.com, and there's a link on our front page there. You can click on that, and there's information on how to contact me. But I'd love to talk to you and help you book the best vacation possible. I want to ask Jeff this first. What do you think, or why do you think there's this fascination with Haunted Mansion? I mean, there's other attractions in the park. They're obviously popular, and Pirates is another one that comes to mind. But there's something about Mansion as far as merchandise, and there's just this mysteriousness about it. I don't know, is that a word? But yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Lynn, I will tell you, so for 25 years on Doom Buggies, I've been trying to figure this out. Like, what is it that makes the Haunted Mansion different than anything else? You know, if you ask Disneyland fans, what's your favorite attraction, or even Disney fans, I would think, and I don't know about right now, but up until recently, they would have said Pirates of the Caribbean, maybe, or Space Mountain before the Haunted Mansion, even though clearly the Haunted Mansion has some type of a grab on people, right? Because like you said, the merchandise and the marketing, you know, and it's not really super new. I mean, there have been phases over the years, but when the Haunted Mansion opened, you know, it was ridiculously popular. People would wait 4 or 5 hours just to ride it, right? For the first few months. So, and they had, you know, they did the same thing. All the mailers and flyers for special events and things used characters. The Hatbox Ghost, even though he wasn't in there, he was on a lot of the flyers, and the Hitchhiking Ghosts. So it's a good question. I hate to say the same thing I often say, but it just seems to have so many niche, like so many people of different niches can appreciate the Haunted Mansion. Like drama people, magicians, actors, Imagineering fans, just Disney fans, Disney collectors, Disney theme park fans, people that like, and everyone, you know, and kind of the spookiness in general, you know, everyone has some kind of a cathartic use for that in their life, or not everyone, but most people. So it's a really hard question. Tom, maybe you have some ideas about why people, why is it so popular?
Well, sometimes I ask myself, if there was no music in it, would it have the same appeal and have the same popularity? And I'm almost certain no. So I think the music has something to do with the way that it emotionally, you know, is associated with your memories and with, you know, I think there's just, it's like, you know, imagine Star Wars without the music. Oh, that's called Galaxy's Edge.
Oh, oh yeah.
Did exactly. I say that? I guess I did. I'll just go out there and say it. They need to bring the music in.
I agree.
Experience. Now, for those of us old folks who go back to the beginning, who were kids when it was not open, but, you know, there it sat behind a gate. I think, at least for us locals, it might have to do with, you know, the rumors that always were flying around, and just the whole intrigue of why is it not open? What are they doing inside there? You know, what is Walt Disney coming up with? And, you know, and then, you know, all these rumors that, you know, even before the internet, were pretty ingrained in the local, you know, all the local communities and schoolyards. You know, this is something you'd actually, you know, kind of talk about, like, oh, we went to Disneyland the other day. Was the Haunted Mansion open? No. And then that would, you know, start a whole line of conversation and speculation. And so I, at least locally, I think that might have something to do with it. Of course, all of those fans are now, you know, old like me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And so there's so many young fans and folks that you may not even, you know, think of would be Disney fans necessarily. So yeah, it does go beyond that. And I think it's just, you know, the general, there's certain design elements of it along with the music that make it kind of like a fine wine. It kind of gets better in your memory over time. Some people, I think, may not even like it at first or think it's kind of dumb at first, but then kind of warm up to it over time. And of course, it's been improved over time. So, yeah, it is kind of mysterious, huh? I mean, there isn't a cult for It's a Small World and Pirates of the Caribbean the way there is for Haunted Mansion.
Yeah. You know, it's not even, I would say to add on to that, like, not only, so you had the local buzz, right? But it also was birthed in the era of this popular haunted house culture, like the Munsters and the Addams Family. Like, that was a thing that people could already relate to in popular culture. So that also, you know, Monster Kid era, monster movies were still big. It wasn't yet the horror movie, you know, slasher thing yet quite. So that probably added to it too. I don't know. That's a good question.
And also, you know, every neighborhood had a haunted house, an alleged haunted house. So not every neighborhood had an alleged pirate ride or an alleged, you know,
is this true?
Any kind of ride. So that might have something to do with it too, that, you know, the whole notion of a haunted house is ingrained even before your familiarity with Disneyland.
I don't know if this is going too deep into it, but maybe you've already thought of this or haven't, but do you think because the subject of death is introduced into this, that's because it's kind of, everyone kind of has their own thoughts on it and it's mysterious in a way, in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
I always wondered if that has something to do with it.
I think so. I mean, Jeff probably has more thoughts about that because you probably think about it more.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Anybody,
right?
On the planet.
Yeah. And I mean, so if you talk to, you know, I it's interesting being a teacher and looking at this because I teach in an art department, right? But there's a psychology department, there's science department. If you talk to the psychologists at school, they would say, absolutely, you know, you can face death and you can face fear in a safe way. You know, there's all these theories and ideas about why people kind of like to do safe things that involve death, like bungee jumping or parachuting, right? Or going to a haunted house because you can somehow know you're going to be okay, but part of that part of your brain turns off and you can still be afraid. Yeah, you know, to some degree or another, that's probably a little part of what's happening with the Haunted Mansion in general. I don't know if that's the hugest thing.
No,
I would suspect more of what we talked about before.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, like I said, depends on the expert you talk to, you know, as to how important that really is.
And I think it has a good mixture of things that everyone enjoys. You know, it has humor, and it's a little scary. It's, you know, got so, and that wasn't the intention in the beginning, was it? It was supposed to be more spooky than it was funny, but it ended up, because of all the mixes of people that were involved and then the changes that happened even after Walt passed away, it kind of changed direction a little bit. And I think it was for a good reason, because it did add humor to it.
Well, and, you know, but Mark had a lot of really dark ideas for it, which, you know, sometimes people forget. And I don't think Mark went in there with the idea that I've got to be the funny man for this. You know, he did. And, you know, most of his gags involve humor, but, you know, there were a lot of ones that he proposed, the bat upside down in the birdcage with the vial of blood, and that whole haunted hallway, the corridor of haunted portraits in those early renderings that he did with the thorns on the wall and just all of the kind of grotesque gargoyle faces that were incorporated into the architecture. You know, maybe he saw that a balance was needed, but there's still a lot to learn about you know, the way things evolved on that. And I haven't specifically learned a lot in the last couple of years. I've been focused on other areas of Disney, but knowing what I know now, if you were to explore the right areas and find the right communiques, you might, you know, there might be a whole other story that we haven't heard about. And I kind of suspect that there is that, you know, yeah. And I won't go any further than that,
but, no, that's fine.
Because it's just speculation and intuition. So I don't want to start anything until I know something kind of more for sure. It's just too bad that so many memories kind of got, I don't think people knew to remember the sequence of events and all of the details. You know, they were just going about their work. And so they were never asked about it until like 20 years later at the earliest.
Yeah.
And so all of the recollections that we have are, you know, kind of altered in that way.
Yeah. They're a little well told and not, I don't want to say stale. You know, I like what you said about Mark.
They are stale.
Yeah, they're a little stale.
and also, you know, they get exaggerated like any game of telephone.
Yeah. Sure.
So things get twisted around and so I hope there's enough information somewhere in file cabinets and recordings or whatever that we might get a better detail, a better sense of evolution and progression.
Yeah. You know, I like what you said about Mark Davis, because I've been thinking about this a lot, especially since Chris and Pete wrote their big giant Mark Davis book. You know, I still will kind of simplify the story of Claude and Mark into, well, Claude was more atmospheric, Mark was more character driven. But if you look at what Mark Davis did, and not just for the Haunted Mansion, but almost everything, like he really had, I guess sardonic is a word I would use to describe Mark Davis. Like it wasn't really, I mean, the things he did were humorous as a byproduct of being kind of sardonic looks at human nature, right? And so he really let that loose with his ideas for the Haunted Mansion. A lot of, like, you're right, like a lot of really dark Charles Adams-ish kind of ideas, right? And so it's not really fair to say, oh, he just wanted it funny and Claude wanted it scary.
Once
you come up with all that next story, like, I'll be first in line to buy the book, because
I don't even know if I've got a book in.
But I mean, you're.
Detailing and at least, what's the word? You know, just trying to get it down on paper.
Yeah.
For posterity.
You have to be right here. You know, I think the Imagineers and the Disney Company was much more interested in just saving artwork and concept art, you know, so we have plenty of concept art, you know, but how that all came about, it's kind of mysterious. And I've talked to Chris a couple times when he was making his book about Mark, and he was really trying to figure this out too. Like, what was Mark doing? Because he had a treatment of the Haunted Mansion that Mark had put together, right? And he clearly was drawing ideas together from everyone, like, you know, finding stuff that they'd done before. Right. You know, it's kind of hard to say what Mark's mindset was about the Haunted Mansion here. Was he all in trying to, you know, bring it to the next stage, or was he just trying to tie it up? You know, it's kind of hard to spell that out, but there's something missing there.
Yeah. And also, you know, the chronology, which I'm still trying to, you know, get a grasp on between Ken Anderson and then Rolly and Yale, and how long were they on that, and when did it really actually start? And then Claude was involved with those two, I think, briefly. And so there is, you know, it's hard to even find kind of cutoff dates because it does, you know, start and stop and start and stop. You know, the holy grail will be if we can find some photographs of any of the mock-ups. I can't believe that nothing exists. But so far, no one's come up with anything.
It is amazing, right? They build a whole haunted house on the studio lot, and somewhere there's a whole box of these pictures.
There was the Ken Anderson one, which was built on Bob Maddie's stage. And that's something I'll tell you right now, you know, is a point of confusion because it's been said that it was a soundstage or, you know, on the Zorro set, in the Zorro set, and all of these kind of descriptions about, you know, where the Ken Anderson, and partly because in different interviews, Ken Anderson uses all those different terms to describe where they did it. But in fact, it was done on Robert Maddie's soundstage, or wasn't even a soundstage, Robert Maddie's special effects building, which was finally torn down about 5 or 6 years ago, unfortunately. All those buildings always have clues inside of them. So that's where that was. And then Rolly and Yale's mock-up was on stage 3, and we have, you know, time frames of both of those, but we don't have photos. I don't think we even have drawings. And that's amazing because there are drawings for every other mock-up. There are drawings for the Matterhorn mock-ups and the pirate mock-ups and the submarine mock-ups and photos of most of those and footage even of some of those. So why nothing exists of the Haunted Mansion, it just adds to the mystery.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Is someone sitting on it, you know? to reveal it.
And, I'm sure the same way it's popular now, you know, it attracts people. And, you know, when this stuff is just sitting there and no one's ever going to care about this, that's when things kind of disappear into other people's file cabinets and, you know, it's somewhere.
I like to think that because, you know, there are a lot of odds and ends that are sitting around in boxes, and Disney Archives and Burbank have been very diligent about not throwing anything out, and, you know, anything that kind of looks tantalizing, you know, they within recent years have been opening up those boxes and finding a lot of really interesting things, but not yet the Haunted Mansion, unless someone's holding out on me.
Maybe. I think it's interesting when you go through the Haunted Mansion that it seems like, you know, we've mentioned all these names and Imagineers that helped with the attraction, but it's sometimes I feel like you can almost pinpoint, you know, who did what in a way. I don't know if you've noticed that too.
I think in many cases,
but
you know, some of the model builders, I am sure the dimensional designers who were involved probably added and had a lot to do with the placement. You know, Claude was kind of orchestrated. Claude was the art director on record for the show, and Mark was a contributor, but Claude was running the show, but he was very egalitarian and was basically letting the different groups, whether they be from the model shop or from architecture or sketch artists, different sketch artists, contribute, and he really wasn't micromanaging it or riding herd on it the way others, you know. And you know, I think it's interesting because it's the first attraction after Walt. So I think people didn't want to come off as being, okay, I'm taking over now for Walt. I'm going to be the be all, say all, you know, end all of decision making for this. So there really wasn't, you know, maybe Dick Irvine was probably the last word. I don't think Roy Disney was involved whatsoever. I don't think anyone over at the studio at this point. was involved. So I think they were trying, they were treading lightly and trying not to, I think they were just, you know, let's keep on going as if Walt was still around, even though he's not. And no one wanted to kind of take the Walt lead.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't a whole lot of big direction, right? Before Walt died, they didn't really have, I mean, it seemed to me, at least from my memory, I'm not an expert, but that they just had a lot of ideas. There wasn't this, you know, concrete, this is what we're doing.
Yeah. They did do a, you know, they did lay it out as a walkthrough.
Right.
Find out with theoretical hourly capacities, which by the way, it was $2,400 an hour theoretically, because they were using the each stretching room fed one half of the show building. And so, and this is where, you know, we don't hear anything about this, but the art director, Carol Clark, you may or may not have heard of, but if you watch a lot of Disney films from the 60s, you'll see art director Carol Clark. He was the art director, one of the art directors on Mary Poppins. And he came from RKO. Disney brought him over when they started live action about 1957 or 58. And around 60 or 61, he included Carol Clark with the WED group. So Walt was just, because, you know, at that time, before they moved to Glendale, they were in a certain wing at the studio. So I think everyone who was in that wing was working, the draftsmen anyway, were working on film and Disneyland, usually mostly Disneyland. The films would come in briefly. So Carol Clark became involved with the Haunted Mansion, and worked with Marvin Davis, who at that time was also mostly working on film, but he wanted their involvement. And I believe it was Carol Clark who did the walkthrough layout for that. We're not sure yet, but I do know for sure that he was involved. What aspect or who did, you've probably seen in, I think it was published in Chris's Mark Davis book, a 1961 era layout for the walkthrough version of the Haunted Mansion.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it might be that Carol Clark either directed that drawing or actually did that drawing. So that's another group of people.
Yeah.
That were involved with that. And that layout, I believe, has an associated script that goes along with it. And I believe it makes use of the Rolly and Yale mock-ups that were done on the soundstage. So that's more to come on that, I guess.
Yeah, just all these adds, like you said, adds to the mystery of the Haunted Mansion. And I think that's just another aspect. I mean, the Hatbox Ghost was something that, you know, was this, you know, did it really exist? And then most people said, yeah, there's, you know, we have evidence. And I don't know, it just, now we have it.
Right. And, you know, mysteriously, they took it out because it wasn't that effective. Well, there's other things in there that aren't quite effective or weren't quite effective either at the time. And so it seems like a weird reason to take it out, unless it was just completely unworkable. But, you know, you hear about light levels and things like that. Well, adjust the light levels,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, and make it work. But, you know, so I think that someone didn't like it. And, you know, it might have been a told you so kind of thing. And maybe someday we'll find some documentation on that.
Maybe they thought it was too scary. I don't know.
Someone thought it was either too scary or if it didn't work right, that it was too janky or something.
Mm, yeah. And now Florida's getting one. So
yeah,
it's a whole nother topic. Yeah.
It was also, you know, about the hitchhiking ghosts. They were late at the end. That was a delay for the ones in the mirror, the ones that you see in the mirror. And so that they had something else rigged up, which now I wish I could go back in time. I mean, I remember seeing the wispy spirits, but were those the Mark Davis sketches?
Sketches, yeah. Dan Olson has also remembered seeing the wispy spirits in the mirrors. Yeah. And I think he's pretty convinced that is what Mark Davis had in mind. And then, so do you, but do you know, did they decide to put those hitchhiking ghosts in the mirror before? Like, there's not a lot of concept art of that.
Yeah, the intention was for those to be in at opening day.
And
they weren't sinking, I guess. Mm-hmm. So they put up a warped screen and projected the, I'm assuming those were the Mark Davis. I remember them being a little wispier than that, but it could have just been that they were out of focus because of the warped material that it was being projected on. So, but I do remember then the hitchhiking ghost appearing about a year later or within the year.
Okay.
And then for the next 3 or 4 years, they were still having the sink problems. So half the time you would go on it and the hitchhiking ghost would be between the doom.
Between.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I think what was happening, it was they were at just slightly different speeds. So they'd catch up and then, they'd be out of phase just by about 10%. Mm-hmm. So you could catch them either registered perfectly or off just a little bit or off a whole lot, depending on where you were in the ride. Finally, they got it worked out.
I didn't know that. See, I learned something every day.
Now, something else I learned was that, and I find this really hard to believe, and yet I'm looking at a piece of documentation that's dated like August 8th or something like that. Oh, you know, we ought to come up with a name for this Omnimover that goes through the attraction before it opens.
Yeah.
It might have been from Marty.
Yeah.
As a result of pre-publicity, the press saying, so what is it that these people are moving on? And, you know, Omnimovers, what's that? You know, it just doesn't sound very spooky. It's industrial. So apparently, I saw a long list of potential names, and then the next day they decided on a name. And so I haven't gone back to there's no reason to doubt the date on that document, but I'm just wondering if there aren't any news articles that are earlier that mentioned Doom Buggy. It seems like there were, but
I wonder, I'm trying to remember now which press releases, because I've been through those press releases with a fine tooth comb, but now I'm wondering which ones were the, you know, final releases when it was about to open and which ones were before that. Because a lot of them do say you're Doom Buggy, but maybe those are the last, because Marty didn't, I think he wrote about that in one of his books about, didn't they have cast members make suggestions at some point for different names for Doom Buggies? And
could be,
somehow they came up with this list, right? And it was, late in the game. I didn't know all the way to August. That's amazing.
I know. I have to go back and look at my notes, but it was the kind of thing like, let's decide this before it opens.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, by this date, it's opening in a couple days.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, maybe they just kind of forgot, because they Atomobile, like they already knew, like, we don't call these Omnimovers, we call them something at Atomobiles, right? So they had to know, like, we have to come up with something. Maybe they were, they're probably being, as the hitchhiking ghosts weren't ready for the mirrors, this must have been a race to the finish. So
It was supposed to open in June, that I know. And I've been told by someone who was involved, who is still around and who would know, because he was the scheduler for the attraction, that he said the slowdown was the Disneyland mill who bid on the construction of the sets. So, the whole thing is ridiculous when you look at the schedule from a timing standpoint, because that rear show building doesn't even go up until the end of February is when steel starts going up. And it's not even a sealed building until late April or May. And yeah, and they're recording the music and the soundtrack in April. And but you know, they may in fact have been ready were it not for, if it's true that the sets were the long lead item on that. They wanted Disneyland Mill Shop, you know, wanted to keep their folks busy and not have to lay people off.
Did the Disneyland Mill build those? Like, Broly told me that Grosh built some of those sets. No?
They may have built the ones for Florida, the sets for Florida.
Okay.
And Grosh did most of the work during that era. They did Small World and Pirates of the Caribbean.
But not the Haunted Mansion.
Apparently, they did not do the Haunted Mansion. I haven't come across anything that says that they did do the Haunted Mansion, whereas there's just a lot of material that, you know, showing how they worked on the others.
Yeah.
So, and I don't have any reason to not believe what the told me. And, you know, it's possible that Grosh did certain elements like the murals. That's something that may not have been any expertise on Disneyland at that time.
Yeah.
They certainly had a big mill. And they may have been facing layoffs or something, so they wanted to keep them going.
Lynn Grosh and Sons, they were a big like set design company for Hollywood and Los Angeles, mostly movies.
They still are.
So that's, so Disneyland would hire them to build some of the set interiors, the sets.
They painted, you know, and they were also specialists in murals. So they did the Grand Canyon mural, they did the Blue Bayou mural, and anytime there was like rear projection screens, drapery, backings, murals, and set pieces, they were involved in some, usually at least one or two of those pieces on it.
When you say mural for the Haunted Mansion, what part were you talking about?
Well, let's see. It's the grand ballroom, which is scenically painted.
Right. So, okay.
I don't know if Disneyland, it's very possible that they had a supervisor from Grosh supervising Disneyland painters on that. I'm trying to think if there maybe behind the casket in the conservatory, if there's a sky wall, you know, a sky scene with trees or anything.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's also possible, you know, that that was a union kind of a thing that they had to go either to Grosh or I'm not aware that Disneyland had a necessarily a scenic, you know, they had themed, they had what's called character painters, which are not people who paint characters, but they paint, they age in grain and do all of that work. But backings or murals, I don't think Disneyland had that skill at that time. So yes, there probably was some Grosh involvement. I just know that Disneyland built the sets.
And you mentioned there was a back building. So I was trying to picture, because I've been back there, but I was, so there's two actual, like,
It's, there's one show building.
Oh, you're just saying the show building itself.
They cut it in half, and one, you know, basically there was a north attraction and south attraction, and so the north stretch would feed the north side of that building, and they would exit in the north graveyard.
Right. Okay.
And at one point in time, and that was the point where they were pouring concrete for the basement immediately below the house. And under the railroad track, the story line, the script, specified that you, at the end of the walkthrough, that you find your way out. You must find a way out. So that's where that line was intended for the end of the experience. And although there are no detailed drawings, what apparently there would have been kind of not a serious maze, but there would have been some kind of a situation where you had to choose different doors to get out. And so those doors were poured in place, not the doors themselves, but the openings for the doors were part of the concrete wall construction package at that time. It's funny because that whole Western expansion where they pulled the railroad track out, it happened really fast. And that's another thing I'm absolutely fascinated about is kind of the rationalization and, you know, the decision-making that went behind all of that, which obviously at the end of the day, it was basically Walt saying, I want it. And I want it now. It's like, but we haven't drawn anything. We don't know what New Orleans Square is going to be. And so how that shape ended up for the basement, you know, is a mystery. Is it based on Mark Davis's drawing, or is Mark Davis's drawing based on the shape of the basement that they dug? But they did it really fast at the end of the 1961 season. The drawings were all done at the end of 61, the beginning of 62, and boom, it's, you know, all poured in it by April. The basement is in place for the mansion and for the New Orleans Square. Very strange. And so, you know, things were changing, I'm sure, in the attraction, you know, because it seems like they came up with a script every couple weeks, you know, from time to time, not all the time, but whenever they were working on it, there'd be, you know, a series of scripts. So whatever they poured in concrete reflected what was in the script at that time, which included this find your way out idea.
Yeah, I kind of wish there was more information also about the design of the Omnimover track, because it seems to me, so you see this symmetrical building, which we know is because they were going to chop it in half, and but then they didn't, right? So they had to fit this in. Really, it's really an amazing track when you look at, you know, everyone, there's, the map is all over the internet, you can see the, you know, the map of the Haunted Mansion, but it's really really amazingly well done, how they kind of really make you feel like you're moving room to room to room to room, yeah, and not coming back behind the other room and then wrapping around that room and, you know, right next, you know what I mean? It's really amazingly well done.
That's the genius of Claude Coates.
Yeah.
And, you know, and people who just were trained in movie sets and back lots, and, you know, that it was still pretty much, WED was still pretty much the model shop. And then the drafting department and the architecture department were still mostly film people at that time. They were just starting to finally bring in, at about this time, around 68, they were starting to bring in non-movie studio architects, I think, in anticipation of Epcot and other projects. But yeah, it's a genius track. And even the hole that you pop out of on that moving ramp is one of the holes that was poured
for the door.
Oh,
yeah.
So they call them leave outs. It's a leave out. And you can see that in one of the pictures that's on the internet that was taken when they just started to put the metallic Armco tunnel along the train track. I don't know where that picture came from. It's not a Disney photo, but it's, you know, it's on the internet and it's really cool. I stare at it all the time, or I used to. it's just very, very interesting how it all kind of slammed together very quickly. And, you know, another mystery now that I've heard a recorded interview from Ken Anderson is that he claims that he did not do that charcoal sketch that Sam McKim then did the color version of. That was in an interview with the e-ticket guys back in the 90s. And he doesn't seem to be, you know, have lost his memory or anything in this interview. He's just very definitive that he did not do that. In fact, he says, I've never seen this before. He says the same about the purple, those purple gouache story panels that have like an octopus and, you know, all sorts of weird things. And he says, I've never seen these either. So those were from the, clearly from the 60, 61 era. I think I know who did them. That person is still alive. Oh. I wish I had time to interview all these people.
Yeah, well, that would be a
dramatic. If you want to go meet these people and, you know, because I, you know, I'm running out of time and so are they.
Yeah.
And it's very, it's, you know, it causes a lot of anxiety on my part because I just, you know, as much as I have desire, I don't have time to follow through. And, but yeah, you know, there's another story there somewhere about all of that. One other interesting thing that I did discover is that the first set of architectural drawings for the mansion, for the building, which included the stretching, were still done at the studio, even though Wed at that time had moved to Glendale. So this is now 62, early 62, and Wed moved to Glendale in the summer, like July and August of 61. But if you look at all the names of the people who did those drawings, they are still in the art department, live action film art department at the studio in what was the Wed office. And one of the person who did what are called the key elevations was Dean Tavolaris, who's still alive and famous because he art directed, production designed every one of Coppola's films, has won five Oscar nominations and one or two Oscars. And if you Google him, he's all over the place. He just moved to Paris. I interviewed him about 3 years ago. He didn't remember doing the Haunted Mansion drawings. I showed him, I said, that's your, right? It says Tavolaris. Well, yeah, that's my signature. So by 61, 62, I was, all I could think of is I just wanted to transition 100% into film, and all of this Disneyland stuff kept, you know, coming across his table. So he was probably in the mode of like, just get this damn thing off.
Yeah. And, walk me through a little bit your understanding of how they went from finding this house in the Victorian catalog of the Shipley Lydecker house. How did they walk from there to making architectural drawings of this building? Did Ken or did someone go out to Baltimore and photograph?
No, Marvin Davis. Marvin Davis probably interpreted both Sam McKim's rendering, if that was, you know, I don't know whether McKim did it after Marvin Davis did it.
Yeah.
So eventually I think that chronology can be figured out.
Okay.
But Marvin Davis did the concept, what do you call them? The schematic elevations, which were the last step before you actually do the architectural package. And so he either had drawings or photos, I mean, of that house. I don't think he went out there to see it. Maybe he did, but I don't think it would have mattered because they knew that only two elevations were really kind of important.
So they you believe they kind of made it up from those, maybe even from that photograph.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
I've kind of wondered because there's
a good question.
Well, there's been this long story about how they went to Baltimore to some college for the Evergreen, whatever. And I never really have seen what the where that came from or what the point of that is. I've always kind of wondered, well, I wonder if that story got messed up and someone traveled to Baltimore to learn about the Shipley Lydecker house and somehow, you know, they stopped at a college campus library or something, you know, and somehow that got confused. I just was wondering if you'd had any kind of insight about that.
You know, I haven't been spending a lot of time in the 60s in the last couple of years. I was, you know, there when I said that, I mean, in various archives, not just the Disney archives, but in the last couple of years, I've been focused on the 50s.
Yeah.
So I haven't run across anything, but I might, you know, because a lot of times trip itineraries and those kinds of things come up. I do know that trips were made, Ken Anderson and Bill Cottrell, to Michigan,
okay,
to go to NELA Park, which was the General Electric lab, basically, Blue Sky Lab, where lighting, where Christmas lights were invented.
Yeah, NELA, yeah.
And developed, NELA Park, yeah. And so they saw some demonstrations of some types of mercury vapor, arc lights, gaseous lighting. And then they also went to visit this magician named Nelson, who had some sort of a haunted house, I think, or lived in a so-called haunted house, to see a demonstration of Pepper's ghost. And then they got the rights from him to use some specific Pepper's ghost setup.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Was that, that's after Disneyland had opened in the.
Yeah. So 50s? This would be, yeah, this would be 57 when this, okay, was happening. Start of 57. I think he had just finished his work on Sleeping Beauty Castle.
Okay.
And so in early 57 is when Ken started on the haunted house. And that's when a lot of scripts were generated. He was working closely with Bill Cottrell, who I don't hear mentioned too much in association with this, but the team was Ken Anderson and Bill Cottrell at the time. And Bill had a researcher at one of the studio researchers named Polly Connell, doing a lot of research for them. And so I believe this trip took place in the middle of 57 or in the spring of 57. And they came back and there was a trip report about what they saw at NELA Park and at this Nelson, I can't remember his first name. And then I presume that they started the mock-ups after that. And then it seems that the mock-ups were finished around November of 57 in Robert Maddy's building. And shortly after that, Ken had gone on vacation. He came back and he was reassigned to probably Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
And so it's very unclear, you know, was he reassigned to Sleeping Beauty because they didn't like what he was doing on the Haunted Mansion or Haunted House? It's probably true that they just needed him more on the on Sleeping Beauty. And there's no conclusion. There's no like, okay, here's, you know, what we learned or what we did on this mock-up.
Yeah.
Another missing piece of the story. And when it was even, you know, when was it struck? I have a photograph of inside that building from the following year, and there's nothing in it except Shaggy Dog costumes and stuff that are being made for Shaggy Dog. That's by like the spring of 58. There's no sign that there was anything,
yeah, huh,
spooky in there.
Yeah,
but it was probably moved out to the set storage area. They had a whole building for set storage.
Wow.
And this that is, stuff, yeah. And there that stuff sat for years and years and wasn't thrown out, I don't think, until 6 or 7 or 8 years ago. So it's, wow, very possible that, you know, someone throwing the stuff out didn't even know what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. This, yeah, is this is going pretty deep, but I'm enjoying it. I was just sitting here going, all right, that's awesome. I didn't know.
I always ignored the studio when I was working at WDI. You know, I mean, I was a little intrigued by it, but not that intrigued by it. Once they tore down all of the outdoor sets, I should say, I wasn't as intrigued by going over to the studio. And I had no idea that there would be stuff lying around a building, one of the, you know, tin roof buildings back there, that would have all of this delightful stuff possibly inside of it.
That would be fun to explore.
To go back in time. Yeah. Oh, to go back in time.
I know. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but
we're good. We're good.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. What? So I wanted to ask just a real basic question. What? When you go through the mansion, what's one of your favorite scenes? Something that I mean, there's so many, but just pick one that you enjoy, Tom.
Well, you know, you can't beat the Grand Ballroom. And so that's why that was the thing that just caused me immediately to want to write it over and over again. It was so intriguing. And it was at the time when holograms had just been invented. So I was assuming that's what they were without knowing what a hologram was. And so I went, you know, in my imagination for a couple of years, they were holograms. And, you know, it was something that me and my friends would debate. Some of my other friends were also either Disney, you know, fans, or they were magic fans. And so we'd have a lot of debates about how that was done down there. My dad, who was involved in scenic design for stage shows and things like that, not with Disney, he thought it could have been Bobinette, that these figures were made in Bobinette. That's that really kind of fine, you know, it's a fine, well, look it up.
Yeah.
You'll know it when you see it. You've seen Bobinette before. It's kind of like Shark's Tooth Scrim, but a lot lighter and more delicate. And my dad was supposing that they had made these frames for the figures and made them out of Bobinette. But that wasn't true either. It was before they put the safety plex in there, it was even more astounding. The safety plex that's there gives you a subconscious clue that there's glass even there, because you're not thinking glass. You know, if you're not into stagecraft or anything, you go there as a typical guest, you're not thinking that there's any glass in there. Now with that protective plexiglass in there, you see the reflection of the chandelier. And I'm going back and forth. Ooh, there's a spook.
Something happened.
A playful spook. And so that gives you a little clue that there's glass in the forest. And so I wish they would take it out, you know, because now people can't come in with guns and slingshots. So, it's, in my opinion, it's time to take it out. But they'll rationalize it by saying, well, we don't have to clean it every night.
That's true.
Yeah. When was your first time on it, Tom, on Haunted Mansion?
October 1st, 1969. I remember the date. I went on it twice. And then within the following year, I had probably gone on it another three or four times.
And were the lines pretty long even in October?
No, I went on a school day. I don't know how I got away with that. one of my sisters took me I just, you know, I would only have been in the fifth grade. It wasn't Columbus Day. So no, there was not a long line for it, maybe 10 minutes. And you know, not really until summer was there again, a huge line for it. But I guess, you know, we would go on my birthday, which is February, and so the line wouldn't be too long. And that was back when they had the graveyard, you know, out in the queue.
Jeff, what about obviously it's probably a hard question to
answer, favorite scenes. It changes. I do have favorites, but they rotate, right? I think I like the character development better, and not even the character development. Really, everything about the Haunted Mansion, like everything for me, goes back to the record and Colin Campbell's illustrations, because that was my understanding of the Haunted Mansion and what was in there. I was a monster kid, like to the hilt, like right at the tail end. I was born in 1969, so I was, you know, I was only a few months old when the Haunted Mansion, 11 months old when Haunted Mansion opened, but, or I guess. No, August, 8 months old. So there it goes. So, you know, but the record was what the Haunted Mansion was. And so my ghost host was Pete Renaday. You know, I liked the British echoey ghosts, you know, and it's just, I wouldn't go on the Haunted Mansion for quite a few years because I knew what was in there, loved it as a monster kid, but I didn't need to see it happen in real life, right? But my favorite characters probably were the Haunted Mansion, like zombies. And what I mean by that is that the, not the ghosts that materialized, but the dead bodies that were starting to like be animated, you know, so because Colin Campbell, like, he would put those things in the corner of his drawings, right? Like, and there's a few in there. There's the coffin ghost. You could call him, they call him a ghost, but it's like a body, right? That's being animated like a zombie, right? And same thing with the guy bricking himself in the column. Like, it's something so creepy, but cool and kind of like Aurora model-ish about those things. And there's a couple of gravestones, I think, that also have like what I believe are supposed to be flesh, dead, mortal zombie hands that are being animated, right? As opposed to the happy ghost jumps around. I just for some reason, like the pictures of those on the record and just like the fact that there are these cool like dead bodies in there, like the whole monster kid in me just always has loved those little vignettes, right? But yeah, don't ask me my favorite scene, man. That's like no, choosing your favorite kid.
Exactly. Yeah. You brought up a thing that I wanted to ask you. So there's all these names of characters in the mansion. Was that wasn't anything from the beginning, right? That's just something more recent. You know how like there's all these different names for.
Yeah. In fact, officially, not until a handful of years ago.
Yeah.
I was tangentially involved in some of that. Kevin Lively, if you know Kevin Lively, in the middle of editing and curating that, because on the one hand, there's, you know, a group that would like everything named in there, and there's another group that would like nothing named in there. And so Kevin did the, you know, heroic job of, you know, deciding which ones would have names and which ones would not. On the construction drawings and some of the documentation, the busts had received names. I can't list them right now, but they're the ones, they appear on the tombstones and in that Haunted Mansion Book of Magic, you know, Phineas Pock kinds of names.
Ned and Rollo and...
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the at least the film lead for the ghost for Leota, or the not Leota, but the hostess, the little what they call little Leota now. She was on the film lead, it said ghostess, which Dan Olson has pointed out was a term they use. There is some, if you go to his I will plug it, his long forgotten blog about the Haunted Mansion, he looks for all these movie references and things. Mark Davis, we knew, voraciously watched movies and television and you know, and stuff, and there is a movie that's very there's a ghostess, she's or a hostess, but they call her a ghostess, and she's inviting people into a mortuary. It's really reminiscent of what little Leota does, and it, you know, who knows, but it's interesting. Sure, they do call her, at least I don't know if they officially named her, but it's on the film lead as ghostess.
Right.
Yeah. Where little Leota came from, I'm not certain.
Right. I'm sure that was afterwards. Yeah. Yeah. There are reference. Oh, you know, and of course, what's the other one? Pickwick.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was fan named or not, but it seems like I saw that.
I think that's drawing. Somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. On an older drawing. Yeah. Yeah, it's
wow. Interesting.
So much mystery.
Yeah, the mystery of the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it just has to do with they burned through it so quickly.
Yeah,
when it was finally turned on, it was like, whoa, you know.
Yeah.
We thought this was never going to get turned on, and all of a sudden it was turned on, and there were a lot of people all working on it at the same time, and there wasn't necessarily, you know, a lot of coordination between different scenes or different groups. So hence you have an attic that doesn't resemble what in your mind would be the attic. I remember that bothering me even at the age of 10, that this doesn't look like, you know, I know what that attic looks like. So another mystery is how the cupola went from a four-sided to a six-sided. Whoever made that decision, why didn't they make it eight-sided? But that was a late decision because Marvin Davis, his schematic elevations, which were done in 61, still have the four-sided cupola. Huh. And by the time it gets to Dean Tavolaris, it is six-sided. And so that was my big question for him, was who made that decision? And his memory was so incredible he he's had nothing to do with Disney since 1964. And he remembered Fred Jurger. He remembered the original art director names. I mean, he remembered everything, but he didn't remember this. And I was so disappointed. I said, so, because, you know, was it you? Did you decide to do that? And it's like, he said he probably didn't have the authority to make that decision. But, you know, a draftsman will do a lot. You know, part of what they do is to kind of slightly improve things in that final stage. And I know he had done that on some other things. So, yeah. But he had no memory of it. So I can't say that he was the one.
Well, I think we're going to end here, but I wanted to ask both of you if you had something you wanted to plug. I know that Jeff definitely does. Tom, did you have something you wanted to plug?
Yeah. Well, I'm, you know, finishing up volume one of what will probably be a 4-volume series on the early days, years of imagination from, I'm sorry, of Imagineering, then called WED Enterprises, from 53 to around 73. Basically the first 20 years. And it's a very deep dive, and maybe too deep. And you'll learn a lot of things that, and I think folks at Imagineering will learn a lot of things that we never knew about who worked there and where things were done and how things were done and time frames and things like that. And lots of pictures, lots of photos that we haven't seen, and photos that we have seen that will finally have missing piece information about who, when, where, how is in the photo. And so that's my volume. I'm finished as far as I'm concerned with it, but it's editorial now, and so it could be a few more months before it comes out. We were hoping to get it out by the end of the year, but
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
Yeah,
you'll know when it comes out.
Yeah, I can't wait. Jeff, how about you?
Yeah, well, Mousetalgia is back. So yeah. I have a weekly podcast called Mousetalgia. If you like Disneyland stuff, that's what we talk about primarily.
Yeah.
A little Disney company, a lot of collecting type stuff because I'm a collector. So we talk about that. So if you're into collecting Disneyana or you like Disney history, Disneyland specifically, check us out, mousetalgia.com.
Awesome. And you have others too.
The Doom Buggies has a podcast too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there you go.
All right.
Well, are you going to do a book, Jeff? You got to do a book.
Yeah. I have, my book is done and it's out there and people get it. And that's I've updated it 5 times. I'm, you know, I'll let someone else write the next definitive Haunted Mansion book.
My dream is to get you and Foxy.
Yeah.
You just mentioned him.
Dan Olson.
Yeah, Dan. Together.
Yeah.
To write the definitive.
Yeah. We could do that.
I can help. I can help.
Yeah, you certainly could. Yeah.
I've got so much.
Well, pull that one to the top of your pile, Tom.
This whole thing started as, you know, I wanted to do a thing about New Orleans Square and the Haunted Mansion and pirates, and now I've got so many other things and proposals going on that I may never get to that original idea.
Yeah.
I certainly have the material for it though, to help someone out with it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you guys for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Good seeing you guys.
Yeah. Right. Good seeing you too.
Happy Halloween.
All right. What an episode. Ken, you were a bit quiet on that one. Were you speechless or what?
I have received your sympathetic vibrations and I'm rematerializing. I didn't want to interrupt. I mean, I didn't want to interrupt the flow of that. Just let them talk.
You didn't want to, or you couldn't? No, I'm just kidding.
I was stunned. But you know, now you've done the seance and I'm back. Just let them talk and, we could do several more episodes about the Haunted Mansion.
Oh, for
and
sure.
As you said, I think if somebody could, the question was asked, you know, what makes it so successful in terms of being part of our consciousness and pop culture and everything. Mm-hmm. And I think if other theme parks could figure that out, they would replicate it. I mean, if somebody could definitively come up with the exact formula that has made it so iconic, but I don't think you can, because I think it's a product of the people who were involved with it, you know.
It is, yeah.
And most of them are gone, you know. And so, yeah, it's the people who, I mean, just all the years it spent being developed and all the different hands that were involved with it. I think one of the reasons the movies haven't, you know, there's been two movies, and one of the reasons they haven't been runaway hits is because it's just hard to capture that lightning in a bottle, you know?
It is, yeah. It's, there's a lot to learn about that attraction. I mean, just when you think, I never thought I knew it all, but I thought I knew a lot. And a lot, I learned a lot just from that discussion. So it's great.
Right.
So I hope you all learned at least one new thing. I'm sure you did. If you like these shows and you want to help support us in another way, we'd really appreciate your reviews on Apple Podcasts, iTunes. We read those in this spot of the podcast. So if you leave a review, and if you've been listening to the show for more than one episode and you enjoy it, then feel free to come on over there and leave us a review, and I'll read it the next episode. Like Kenan mentioned, we have, I don't think you mentioned it on this episode, but on our current events episode,
sometime, you know,
you always mention it, but we have a lot of cool shirts and, you know, merchandise at our website, thesweepspot.com. They make great gifts as the holidays are approaching. Get early on your shopping and go over to the Sweet Spot.
It's a good point. It's a great gifts for people who are fans of theme parks or Disney, you know, especially Disney theme parks.
Yeah. Or if you're a janitorial fan, you know.
If you know a janitor who would like a gift, there you go.
That's right. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk with you next time.